Hi, this is Dan Melton. Thanks for joining us for this podcast of St. Andrew's Weekly Message. I hope you enjoy it. I encourage you to listen through the words to what God is saying to you, and may the peace of God be known through your life this week. Years and years ago, when we opened the building committee said, Dan, what kind of furniture would you like? You don't want a podium. What would you like? What is this, 11 years later? I'm still here, so maybe we'll have like a little table or a side table or something like that. There are different ideas out there, but for now, the simple music stand. This week, I became interested in some unusual stories I had heard about, and I talked to an AI chatbot named Claude to investigate these stories. Claude was just the one that was available where I was. There are these stories of strange happenings after heart transplant surgeries. You ever heard these stories? A donor heart from someone who is recently deceased is given to a recipient who is in need of a heart. And the AI bot found a few interesting stories about this. One involved a woman named Claire Sylvia. She received a heart-lung transplant in 1988. And her story gained attention because she wrote a book about it, and I think this book made a bit of a splash. I was looking at the endorsements and recognized the names of the people who endorsed her book. After she had the heart transplant, Sylvia reported developing new cravings and preferences that she had never experienced before. Most strikingly, she began craving beer and chicken nuggets, food she had previously not liked very much, but she wanted beer and chicken nuggets. She also reported having vivid dreams about a young man named Tim. So she got curious about this, and she decided to research who was the donor that gave me his precious or her precious heart. It was a him, and this was a young 18-year-old man named Tim who had died in a motorcycle accident, and his family confirmed that 18-year-old Tim had indeed loved beer and chicken nuggets. Strange. Another well-known case involved a man by the name of Bill Wall. He received a heart transplant in the year 2000 when he was 57 years old. Now, before the transplant, Bill was self-described like as a tough guy, businessman, not interested in the arts, just kind of, you know, type A businessman moving forward. That may be the reason he needed a heart transplant. I don't know. But after receiving his new heart, he also began to notice significant changes in his personality and preferences. Strangely, despite never having an interest in the arts, he developed a strong interest in classical music, particularly the piano composer Chopin. Now, he found himself also kind of drawn to colors and nature in a way that he'd never felt before. He stopped to admire flowers, which was new. He reported becoming a little bit more emotional and sensitive, which was unusual for him. So he decided to learn more about his donor. He discovered that his heart had come from a 34-year-old man named Keith who had died in a car accident. After he contacted Keith's family, Bill learned that Keith had been an avid violin player and particularly had loved Chopin's music. Keith had also been described as a sensitive person who loved nature and flowers. These stories go on and on where people experience, after a heart transplant, they experience something they can't explain, and yet they go back and they find that there's a link with the person that gave them their precious heart. Very briefly, one that was also sort of funny was a man by the name of David Waters, also sort of a tough guy. He was a steel worker. He liked watching sports and working on cars. I grew up in the Rust Belt. I know these guys. Steel worker, sports, working on cars, usually pretty hardy people. After he received his new heart, he also developed changes in his personality, a passion for writing poetry drawn to classical music. Probably interesting conversations in the steel mill there. Hey, curious about these changes, he researched where does his transplanted heart come from. A 24-year-old Italian-American woman named Danielle. She was described as a sensitive, artistic person who loved poetry, classical music, and romantic movies. Very interesting. Now, these aren't ghost stories or hauntings or anything like that. These are cases where, through this incredibly sophisticated modern medical procedure, organs are transplanted from a donor into the body of a recipient who is on a waiting list. It is entirely a scientific medical process. This is an organ. It's body tissue. It's inner flesh, if you will. There's no expectation that there would ever be any connection between the person who gave the heart and the person who received it. They don't meet. They don't know each other's names unless they research, apparently. But in some instances, and I'm sure it's probably on the rare side, but in some instances, some memory of that person's life, the donor's life, is experienced in the life of the person who received the heart. Now, how could that possibly be? My education has suggested that all these kinds of things, food, culture, music, whether it's sports and working at the steel mill or playing violin and crying at the end of a romantic movie, that these all happen up here. That's what I learned. That's the way I think. Is that the way you think? That it all sort of happens up here. The heart, by contrast, is assumed to be a muscle. And it's primarily a pump. It's an amazing pump. It's complex. Valves, compartments. The blood flow is supposed to go this way and that way. And if it doesn't, it's a reflux. And there are electric signals that go to the heart that guide its movements. If the heart stops, we try to shock it back into working. If the arteries going to it get clogged, we try to widen them again or we splice in new material. At the end of the day, though, as far as we know, that's the heart's main job. That's all it does. There's no Chopin or opera or pasta cravings in here or chicken and beer and nuggets. Chicken nuggets and beer cravings in here, right? Or could there be more? Maybe our information about the heart is incomplete. You know, it's interesting as I delve into the ancient Chinese medicine that I practice, the medical classics of this very, very old system talk about the various parts of the body like they're a kingdom, and it's a metaphor. They all kind of come together to run the kingdom, and the lung is the prime minister that make sure that things move rhythmically, and each minister around the table has a job. The brain isn't even there. They don't say very much about the brain. They didn't know much anatomy, but they don't really know much about a brain or say much about it. They know it's there, but they don't really think about it very much. But the heart, by contrast, is the emperor or the empress of the kingdom. It is the heart's job to discern the will of the heavens, and all the ministers are supposed to go do their job so that the emperor or the empress can move through life carefree so that they are open to what the will of heaven is for the kingdom. Very interesting metaphor. I was also thinking, you know, I can't think of a reference to the brain in the Bible. There might be one. The mind, yes, but specifically the brain, I couldn't think of one. But when I did a word search on the word heart in the Bible, there are over 650 references. 105 of them are in the Old Testament Psalms, and we're starting, and I guess that could be a very long series, right? If we took each one, 105, we're not going to do that. We're just going to take a handful. But we are going to talk through some of the references to the heart in the Psalms. When we see the word heart in the Bible, it's not usually, if ever, referring to the human heart as a pump. It usually has to do with what we call the mind, or the emotions, or the will. There are lots of interesting verses and lots of things that the heart does because it's sometimes talked about as an active participant in life that are very interesting things to explore. So we're going to work through some of those in the next couple weeks. The insights are that if we steward the heart well, if we take care of it, that we can flourish and be happy. In Psalm 57, the psalmist writes, "My heart is steadfast, O God, my heart is steadfast." And then he repeats it, which in Scripture, when you see an emphasis like that, that means it's like double exclamation points. "My heart is steadfast, O God, my heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody. Awake, my soul. Awake, O harp and lyre. I will awake the dawn. I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you among the nations, for your steadfast love is as high as the heavens. Your faithfulness extends to the cloud." Prior to these verses, the psalmist is alluding to being downcast because of enemies, but whatever plot had been hatched against the psalmist failed, and the psalmist is delivered, and he is joyful and happy, like really, really happy. several years ago at Christmas, we were at my in-laws opening presents, and it was my turn, and I opened my present. It was very nice. I was very grateful for it, and I said, thank you. This is really nice. I'll enjoy it. The room was kind of silent for a minute and still, and Emma, who our middle child, who was probably in elementary or middle school at that time, said, yeah, my dad's not really like a woohoo kind of guy. Well, the psalmist is a woohoo kind of guy. My heart is steadfast, he says. He is singing. He wants to wake the dawn with his song. In Hebrew, steadfast can mean firm, in place, established, prepared. It implies like a fidelity to someone. Now, if the heart is just a pump, how can all that be true? Well, I think a lot of us say, well, we just, you know, in the ancient days, people thought of the heart, but that's just because they didn't know. And now we just substitute the word brain. I don't know if that serves. Years ago, a church member was telling me the story of how she heard devastating news. And she said, it hit me so hard right here in the chest. It just hit me right here. And she kind of slumped over. Now, she didn't say, boy, that bad news just really hit me in the brain. Nobody says that. She said it viscerally. She pointed to it. She pointed to her heart. Why? Why would she point to her heart if it was just a pump and she just knew it was up here? Same way, if we're happy and joyful, conversely, if we get happy news. I was thinking about my wife loves to go to Disney and see the morning. There's a morning dance on Main Street. Is it Zippity-Doo-Dah? Does anybody know? Happens every morning at Disney World. She loves it. And those people, if they're like this, they're fired. They got to be, you know, like doing their thing. When people are joyful and happy and proclaiming something, their chest is open. They're not slumped over like this. I thought, you know, what if the heart is more than just a metaphor? I think it can be a metaphor for many things, but what if it's more than just that? In the latter part of the 20th century, researchers named John and Beatrice Lacy, among others, discovered that there is actually more going on with the heart than we realize. The idea, again, was sort of it's a slave pump. It takes orders from the brain. It's part of the autonomic nervous system, which is the part we don't have to think about. That's why we stay alive while we're sleeping. The autonomic nervous system, or ANS, keeps that going. We're like, well, the heart's part of that. It just keeps order. It just takes orders from the brain. What researchers have begun to realize is there's a little bit more autonomy there. There are more than 40,000 neurons in the heart, what some people are now calling the brain in the heart. 40,000 neurons is about the same as some of the processing centers in the brain. And we've learned that the heart doesn't just respond like a robot pump. It processes it. It coordinates with other organs. It is part of arranging the symphony. It actually talks back to the brain. The Lacys and others discovered that our heart beats, our beats, aren't just mechanical throbs of a diligent pump. Our heartbeats are an intelligent language that significantly influence how we perceive and react to the world. Our heartbeats are a language. What happens when your heart speeds up? Are you relaxed? No, your heart is responding to something. It's speaking something. Sometimes, have you ever noticed you feel a tightness in here or a happiness or something like that? And you're not cognitively processing that I feel a certain, I'm not stressed. I'm not stressed. But your heart says you're stressed. The quote I just read was from them. A group of people formed an institute that writes about this. They're called the HeartMath Institute. They have a consulting wing that works with corporations like Motorola and Shell Oil and school and police departments. They've been pervasive in consulting with different organizations. They have come down to one of their key measures of heart wellness in a moment, if you will, a snapshot, is something called heart rate variability, or HRV. Now, that probably started out as a fringe concept, and this is measuring the relationships between the beats of a heart. But it's no longer a fringe concept. I have a smartwatch here, and when I go into my phone that's paired with a smartwatch, it actually is tracking my HRV. You can track this. I've heard of doctor's offices having an HRV machine that measures how we are doing in a certain moment. And as institutes and seminars do, they have techniques for helping people to settle into healthy rhythms, to bring breathing and heart into sync. And what they've discovered is It's actually measurable. Let me show you something. What they chart are graphs like this when people are hooked up to monitors. And these sometimes are simple monitors. Some of them actually attach to the earlobe. I have one. When someone is frustrated, anxious, worried, irritated, they are, according to this group of people, in something they call incoherence. That means that different body systems are, there's like a push-pull going on, right? And we're not feeling good. But when someone syncs up with their breathing, they're relaxed, and their heart is peaceful, that's what we see on the bottom graph. They call that coherence. Things are coherent. The body systems are coherent. Everything's working together, and the heart reflects that. This can change in literally seconds when you chart it, when you have a sensor. You can see it change in seconds. The heart is doing something. The heart is responding to something. It's not just like, okay, brain says speed up, brain says slow down. There's a lot more going on. There's a rhythm in a moment of time, there is a rhythm to your heart. If you're happy, it has a certain rhythm. If you're upset or anxious, it has another rhythm. Our hearts speak. It's an amazing, amazing thing. And I thought, what if we combined ancient wisdom with modern science? If we stop to ask, if we stop to say, my heart is steadfast, to ask which graph, don't go backwards. Don't show them the graph again, because we'll have to see Eddie again. But what graph would we see when we were in a place of saying, God, my heart is steadfast? What graph would we see? Could we actually chart how we're doing with our faith in a certain moment? What graph could we see when we're in deep prayer? I think that lower graph with the smooth curves, I think that's what deep prayer looks like. Yesterday, I was filling you in, some of you, and more as a warning that I wasn't 100% this morning, because yesterday I got into a home improvement project and I kind of got in over my head. And it was one of those improvement projects, many of us have gotten into them. We're going back to the big box store, we're coming home, we need another part, we're going back to the store. Our heating system was down, or HC rather was down. It was a very hot day. I was anxious to get it back up. And I'm driving back and forth to the store. I'm furiously, you know, working on problems, trying to get things going. And because I knew I was going to preach this message this morning, I was paying attention to my heart. It did not feel good. I was hurried. I was anxious. I was worried. I was wondering if I could get things moving again by myself on a weekend when we needed air conditioning. Now, I'm not going to normally tell you that. I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, I totally handled it. It was totally fine. I was all great. You know, I totally had it under control. Look what I did. I fixed it. It was late at night, but I fixed it. That's what this is going to tell you. But if you had me hooked up to that sensor all day, it would have been that craziness. And I thought, wow, I'm living it. I'm living my message for tomorrow. I'm not living the great side of it. That's why I need today to be coherent. So the rest of the day is devoted to that as Sabbath, so that Monday morning I can wake up refreshed and ready to hit the pavement with my work schedule. The writer of Psalms says we can have a steadfast heart. I think that's literal. I think we can literally have a steadfast heart. I think we can have a joyful heart. I think we can also have an anxious heart and a worried heart. And I think that really takes that out of us. It is and the heart math people will say, when you are in those states, it is a massive energy drain and it is terrible for your health and your well-being. But nobody ever coaches us like this is how we should pay attention to actually what we feel in our chest. And I want to suggest the reason that this idea of the heart having more than being just a pump, the reason it's persistent is because that's what we experience. We experience feelings here. We just don't know what to do with it because as far as we know, they don't exist. They're all up here. They're here too. They're here too. And the sooner we get comfortable with that, the sooner a door will open up for us to live a more generous and abundant life, a more heart-centered life. That's a possibility. And course, the benefits, the wellness benefits are amazing after that. But I think it begins with a healthy spirituality and a focus on where our heart is with relation to God, and that's how I want to close today. I want to close with an experiential prayer. Just take a moment of relative silence. Invite you to be still for a moment. And learn to do this on a daily basis. Check in with that area of your body that we associate with the heart. How's it doing, that part of you? Check in with it. How is your heart? Take it seriously. Acknowledge it. What emotions rise to the surface when you think about your heart and acknowledge it? Sometimes it's going to be sad because we haven't realized we've been walking around sad or stressed, and I'm not trying to put you into a moment of distress, but just acknowledge that, like, wow, I've been carrying a big burden or load, or I feel sad, or I feel happy, I feel excited about the day. What emotions rise up? The psalmist says, my heart is steadfast. It can be anchored. That rhythm, that graph, it can be anchored in our spirituality with God. My heart is steadfast, O God. Now bring us into that peace, dear God. Remind us that you love us, that you're here. No matter what rises up to the surface, you're not surprised by it because you knew it was already there. We're the ones that keep pushing it away. We're the ones that don't want to acknowledge. But you're there, right there with us, however our heart is beating today, whatever the rhythm, whatever the push-pull in our nervous system. God, you are with us right now. Take a moment to the extent that you're comfortable. Take a moment to take a breath. Just be present. And the offering this week is to pay attention to that part of your body the psalmists call the heart. Almighty God, we come before you in a moment of vulnerability and humility. We open our hearts to you and to one another in the name of Christ, and we welcome your presence with us this week. Amen.